So, as Reverend Grisman mentioned, when we talk about Pinchas and Eliyahu, we talk about the topic of zealotry. And usually, when we think of zealotry, it doesn't have the most positive connotations to it. We can all think of examples that have happened, that continue to happen, of religious fundamentalists sort of doing extreme acts in the name of God. And certainly, I'd say on a day, as an American, we just celebrated our Day of Independence. I know there was Canada Day recently, and we're very thankful for the fact that we live in a country where there is religious freedom, we have freedom of expression, people don't impose their viewpoints upon us, and therefore, it strikes us as very challenging when we hear about this notion of zealotry and being a zealot, acting in the name of God, even murdering in the name of God. It's very hard to grapple with that. And so in that vein, what I'd like to do is focus on the topic of zealotry. Is this a positive thing? Is it a negative thing? Is it something we encourage? Does it depend? What is it exactly? What character trait is a kana'i demonstrating? And how does it relate to us nowadays? I think that's also important to think about. Because while we read about Eliyahu HaNavi, we read about Pinchas, they're quite fascinating stories, quite fascinating characters, but I imagine that none of us is willing right now to act in the ways that they did. I certainly am not. I don't plan on doing anything like that. And if that, being that it is the case, so what does zealotry mean for us here in 5780? That's what I like to think about. So just to briefly review the story, you have it here in source number one. So the Bnei Yisrael, as we read in these past week's Parshiot, it's very much a roller coaster. Chukat Balak is very much a roller coaster ride. There are a lot of ups and then downs. And as our Rebbetzin Grisman mentioned, we start off with these brachot of Bilam. Bilam is this prophet, this non-Jewish prophet who tries to curse Bnei Yisrael, and he can't help but say all these wonderful things about the Jewish people, how wonderful our tents are, as we say, Matovu Alecha Yaakov, how wonderful the Jewish home is, how Hashem loves us. And then, of course, what do we do but completely blow it? We completely blow it. And the next paragraph in the Torah describes a very horrific scene. To sort of briefly summarize what happens, we're told that the Jewish people start committing two very horrific sins. Number one, there is this zinut, there is this cohabitation with Gentile women, which is obviously a very egregious error on everyone's part. They're vayiznu achrei benot Moav, they stray after these Moabite women, or Midianite women, depending on who you ask. So that's one. And also that leads to idolatry, to worshiping Baal Peor. And these are two very horrific sins. And the Jewish people are very much immersed in them. It's a very horrific scene. And Hashem, there's a bit of a lack of clarity in exactly what happened here, but I think on a simple level, Hashem tells Moshe, get all the heads of the people, and we have to adjudicate these crimes. We need to prosecute these people who are committing idolatry, who are cohabiting with Gentile women. This is horrible. Stop it. And Moshe begins to do that, and he tells the judges to judge all these people, punish them for what they've done, punish all the people who have clung to Baal Peor, and then that's when this horrific scene takes place. So this person, Bnei Yisrael, goes, he takes a Midianite woman, he starts cohabiting with her in public, a tremendous desecration of Kavod Shemayim, and people are in shock. They don't know how to react. How could such a thing happen? What do we do? No one really knows what to do. They start crying. And that's where Pinchas comes in. Pinchas comes, takes his spear, sort of to put a very radical act in a more comical light. You know, he makes a shish kebab of the people committing the sin. They're dead. He kills them. And the end of the parsha is Vayuam Meitzim B'Magifar B'Avesher Malef. 24,000 people die in this plague, and Pinchas stops the plague. That's what we're told. And then we have the continuation of this parsha. And that's the beginning of Parsha Pinchas. And I want to focus on it for just a few minutes. Pinchas ben Azar ben Aron HaKohen Neshivech HaMati Mi'al B'nei Yisrael B'kano HaKenoti B'tocham. He says, Pinchas, the son of Elazar, the son of Aaron HaKohen, remove my wrath from the people of Israel. Hashem is talking and saying, I was very angry at the Jewish people. Pinchas made me less angry. How did he make me less angry? B'kano HaKenoti B'tocham. When he demonstrated my jealousy, my zeal, meaning I was angry, I was jealous, Pinchas felt that, and he acted on that. And therefore, I didn't eradicate the Jewish people in my jealousy, right? In my jealousy over what they were doing, over their worship of other gods, I withheld myself from eradicating them completely. I mean, think about it, 24,000 people died. Imagine how bad it would have been if Pinchas didn't intervene. We're reviewing this as some sort of miraculous saving of the Jewish people when 24,000 people died because of the sins they committed. But Pinchas stopped it. And again, Hashem is saying, how did he stop it? With his kinah, with his zealotry. And therefore he says, L'chein emor hineni notein lo et biriti shalom. Therefore, tell, say to Pinchas, say to the Jewish people, I am giving him my covenant of peace. Now that sounds like a very positive reward for his kinah. Briti Shalom sounds wonderful. It's not 100% clear what it does, and I'd like to talk about that in a few minutes. But again, he says, just hold on, Ezra, just go back up for a second. And there was for him and his offspring a Brit Kunat Olam, which means that for now on, he and his offspring will be Kohanim. They have a brit kunah, a covenant of priesthood. This, as we'll see, is a bit controversial because Pinchas, as we saw, the son of Aharon has already been promised the kahuna. Aharon and his family have already been appointed to be kohanim, to be priests that serve in the temple. But Hashem is telling us again now that now Pinchas and his descendants as well are being promised the kahuna. Why? Tachat asher kinei lelokav. Since he was jealous for his God, v'yechaper al b'nei Yisrael, and he atoned for the Jewish people. And now the pasuk actually notes who was involved in this egregious public sin. V'shem ish Yisrael asher ukat midyanitz mi ben salu, the name of the Jewish man who was struck along with this Midianite woman was Zimri, nesi beit av v'shemoni. A prince from the tribe of Shimon, a very important person who committed this egregious act. And the woman's name, the Midianite woman, was Kazbi Batsor. She was a princess. She was the daughter of a very important person in Midian. So we have this description again to sort of summarize a horrific act in public. Horrible things are happening. The Jewish people are dying. There's a plague. No one knows what to do. Pinchas comes, spears them both with one strike, kills them instantly. This stops the plague. And Hashem says, I'm going to reward Pinchas. I'm going to reward him. Why? Reward him because he demonstrated this zealotry, because he was jealous on my account. He was jealous of Shem Shemayim. And I am going to reward him with Briti Shalom. And I'm going to reward him with Kunat Olam, with eternal priesthood. My covenant of peace and eternal priesthood. Okay. We look at these psukim, and at first glance, we see that this was amazing. What Pinchas did was incredible, beautiful. What a wonderful act, L'shem Shemayim. That's the impression that you get. Indeed, that is the impression that you get among the Mefarshim who tried to interpret his reward. We'll start with the Zohar in source number 2. The Zohar is obviously a Kabbalistic, esoteric source. I'm definitely not a Kabbalist, but I do know that he's certainly speaking in very positive terms about what Pinchas did. It says as follows in source number 2, Bo Ure, come and see, Mishe Mekane L'Shem HaKadosh Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. or Shlema Kadosha Kadosh Baruch Hu, someone who is jealous for the name of the Holy One, blessed be He. Shafiu lo yisked dula velo yeroyla, even if they aren't worthy of greatness, they're still going to achieve this greatness, even if they're not worthy of it, because they are jealous for God. Pinchas lo haya ro'ila ba'otozman. Pinchas wasn't worthy of his reward. He wasn't worthy of it. Since he was jealous for God, he gained everything. He ascended to everything. He fixed everything. And he merited the usage of the high priesthood. Again, I'm not 100% sure what all of that means, but it certainly sounds wonderful. He got everything. He gained everything. He ascended over everything. Amazing what Pinchas did. You look in the Sfarno in source number 3. The Sfarno is explaining this Briti Shalom. What does it mean, the covenant of peace? Says the Sfarno, the peace is from the Malach Hamavet, meaning from the angel of death, that Pinchas enjoyed a very long life. Maybe he even lived forever, as Rebbetzin Grisman noted. Maybe he was Eliyahu Hanavi and he never died. Maybe he was not, but either way, he's mentioned much later in Jewish history. He enjoys an incredibly long life. Why? Because of this act of zealotry. So we see that there's this incredible perspective and reward given to Pinchas because of what he did. And it does strike us a bit difficult. Again, zealotry is not something we always look on in such a positive light. So if you look at source number 4, I'd like to point something out here that's very important to notice. The Baal Akedah, and Ezra, if you could please scroll down, Rav Yitzchak Arma, from 15th century Spain, his Akedah Yitzchak, explains what was so wonderful about what Pinchas did. Meaning, certainly it's amazing that someone... Certainly it was amazing that he saved so many people's lives. There's no doubt about that. But what was uniquely special about his kanaot? And he explains as follows. Amnam oru tanam ledat ma'alat ha-maseh ha-eloki. Ha-hu? B'mash nitorer Pinchas l'kanaot elokav. The sages came to awaken us to the amazing godly act that Pinchas did. Lasim nafsho bekapola maasehu levilti shmoal tana ritzonia mechayevroto liashev. Number one, he did this incredible act to risk his life, put his soul in his palm, and not listen to the claims which would require him to stop. There are many reasons for Pinchas not to do what he did. Number one, penyifku bo anashim mari nefesh. Number one, the people who were relatives. This was a very prominent person in society. This was a Nasi Beit Av LeShimoni, a prince among the tribe of Shimon. He easily could have been attacked in response to what he did. They could have killed him. And he did it anyway. And also in terms of intellectual reasons not to do this. Intellectual reasons for him to not do what he did. Because there was more for Pinchas to lose than to gain by doing this. Why is that? And as we'll see again, the Rav Yitzchak Arma, the Akeas Yitzchak, points out something incredible about what happened here. Even though this was halachically sanctioned, even though we say, and we'll study this in a few minutes, that if someone sees another person cohabiting with a non-Jew in public, they have the right to attack that person, we don't encourage this. We don't encourage kana'ut in this way. Ain morin lokain. If you go to a rabbi and say, should I be a zealot? Should I attack this person who's sinning in public? The rabbis say, no, you shouldn't. Ain morin. We don't tell them to. Why? Gam lefit surat hadin hu mistakin ma'od. By law, legally, you're putting yourself in great danger by doing this. Pinchas was risking his life. Shem pirish abo v'hargo ha-kanoi ne-hargo yado b'vistim. Number one. And this is what's important to talk about. This person, Zimri, who was committing this act, if two witnesses came and testified in court that Zimri had done something horrible, that he had taken this woman and cohabited with her in public, you know what Basin would have said? Basin would not have said, okay, kill him. You are not liable for death in court for doing something like this. In fact, if they had separated from one another, if Pinchas hadn't caught them in the act and killed them a moment afterward, he could be tried for the death penalty in court. He would be legally chayav mita, liable for death. Number one. Number two. Vimharaga boa lekanai ein lo damim. Sharei rodev nitin latzei latzmo b'nashol sharodev. If Zimri ben Salu, this person who was, again, doing something horrible, would have stopped in the middle, taken his sword, and killed Pinchas, that would have been permissible. He would not have been tried for doing that. Zimri would have had the right to defend himself. So the Kei Yitzchak tells us, Pinchas risked everything for this act. He risked potentially getting attacked by Zimri's relatives and his tribe. He risked missing the moment and himself being liable for the death penalty by court. He even risked Zimri himself defending himself and not being guilty for it, and yet he gave all that up. He risked all of that simply in order to be jealous for God, because he said, God's name is at risk. This is a Chil Hashem. I'm going to stop it no matter what. And so this first perspective is, this is an amazing act of sacrifice that Pinchas did, and that's why he's being rewarded so richly. And if you look in source number 5, the Shelah HaKadosh, Rabbi Yeshaya Horowitz, says that this is a lesson that we should indeed learn. This is something we should think about. Mizel Yomod HaAdam, says the Shelah in source number 5, from this a person shall learn, Sheyikaneh Kinat Hashem Tzvako Kisharoa Ezechil Hashem Uchil HaTorah, that we need to be jealous for God when we see the desecration of God's name. You see someone shaming God's name in public, desecrating the Torah, making a mockery of Torah, be jealous for God. Do something about it. Look how Hashem rewards Pinchas for what he did. Clearly it was amazing. So that's one perspective on this idea, that Pinchas was spectacular, amazing, acted for God. We have so much praise for him. A little bit higher up, source number 6 has her. Be that as it may, there is another perspective on this. And as we'll see, it's not so simple. So number one, we note that one of the rewards that Pinchas gets, actually two rewards, Pinchas gets two rewards for his act. One is Brit Shalom, the covenant of peace, and the other one is Brit Kunat Olam, a covenant of eternal priesthood that different explanations in the Rishonim, either he will be the high priest and his descendants will be the Kohen Gadol, or he'll simply be part of the Kohanim, the priesthood, forever. And it's a bit challenging for two reasons. Number one, Brit Shalom, a covenant of peace. When do you get a covenant of peace? Think about what Pinchas did. He just took a spear and killed two people with one strike. Is that an act that you generally associate with peace? I would think not. I would think that that's not a very peaceful act. Number two, Brit Kunat Olam. Well, he was already a Kohen. It says he's the son of Aharon HaKohen. So why does he need a reward of Brit Kunat Olam? Well, that's where the Riva, in source number 6, Rabbi Yitzchak ben Asher Alevi, one of the first Bahalei HaTosfot that we know about, a student of Rashi, says as follows. You know why he needed Brit Shalom and he needed Brit Kunat Olam? Because a Kohen, if someone is a Kohen and murders another person, kills another person, they lose their kehuna. The rule generally is, a Kohen who kills no longer can do nesiyah kapayim, no longer can bless the people publicly as Kohanim do even nowadays, and can no longer serve in the Beit HaMikdash. Pinchas should have lost his priesthood. And therefore God says, no, because you acted in my name, will reward you with Brit Kunat Olam and Brit Shalom, that you'll continue to maintain your priesthood. So number one, we see, okay, so this is a bit of a stain on Pinchas' record. He can't be the pure Kohen. You think of a Kohen as, I believe, Rebbetzin Grisman noted, Kohen are there, Kohanim are there to bring peace. The blessing that they bless the people with is about priest, Shalom. They're Tamidav Shalom, Aharon, a Kohen. Aharon was Oev Shalom, Barodev Shalom. Aharon, Aaron the priest, is known for loving peace, pursuing peace. Killing is not does not coincide with that. It's not consistent with that message. So Pinchas lost that, and Hashem had to restore it to him. But then we see even further in the Netziv in source number 7 that it's even more than that. It says in Netziv, it's not that Pinchas was simply rewarded with Brit Shalom. Pinchas needed Brit Shalom. Pinchas needed the covenant of peace. Says in Netziv, "Bishchar she'niach kaso v'chamato shel Hakadosh Baruch Hu, because he alleviated the anger of God, bercho b'midat hashalom shelo yakpid v'lo yargiz. God blesses him with the attribute of peace so that he shouldn't, in the future, lose his temper and get angry. U'mishvil ki teva ha'adam teva ha'maseh she'asah Pinchas la'harog nefesh b'yado. The nature of the act that Pinchas did, to kill a soul with his bare hands, hayanotim lashir belev hergesh az gam acherkach, should have left a very strong impression even afterward. This action should have had a very negative impact upon Pinchas' life. Killing someone with your bare hands, that should have really affected Pinchas. Aval basher haya l'shem shamayim, since he did it for the name of heaven, Mishum hachi ba'aha bracha she'etamid benachat midat shalom v'lo haya zeh inyan l'pukat lev. Therefore God blessed him that he should constantly be in peace and serenity, and that this shouldn't cause an emotional failure. This shouldn't be a permanent nature of Pinchas, that he should be someone who is makpid and margiz, who is constantly angry and taking vengeance. Now, given what we learned in the last year, you know, how if Pinchas is Eliyahu, then this is kind of quite ironic, because we don't know that he really maintains the Brit Shalom. The truth is that the Netziv also notes that there are two circumstances where Pinchas in Nach is alive for two very egregious sins, one of them being Pilegesh Begivah, if you know the story of the concubine in Givah, without the need to go into detail, and Pesel Micha. The point is, there are times in Pinchas' career where he actually, says in Netziv, says from Naftali to you to Berlin, where Pinchas was too peaceful, where he should have objected more, and he didn't. But the point is that you see already that this act that Pinchas did wasn't so simple. We don't say necessarily that this was completely obvious, easy, a pure act that he should have done that were rewarding for it, but this really could have affected Pinchas in a very negative way. And this makes sense to us. Kana'ut is dangerous. But the Yerushalmi takes this a step further. To take a look at the Yerushalmi in source number 8. Says the Yerushalmi, and if you can scroll down please, Ezer, Ketiv, Vayar Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aharon HaKohen. So Pinchas, the son of Elazar, the son of Aharon HaKohen, said, Ma ra'a? What did he see? Ra'ata ma'asev nisker l'halacha ba'wel aramit kana'im pogim bahen. He remembered the law that if someone is engaged in intercourse with a Gentile woman in public, then kana'im pogin behind, zealots can attack them. However, and we get the next line. Tani, shelo beritzon chachamim. It was taught, this is against the will of the sages. What Pinchas did was shelo beritzon chachamim. And you have two different streams of thought in Mefarshim. Either what the general notion of kana'im pogin bo is shelo b'ritzon chachamim, meaning even one approach is generally being a zealot, acting upon this permission to kill someone who desecrates God's name, that is generally against the will of the Chachamim, or that what Pinchas did specifically is against the will of the sages. This is something that was not approved of. And the Gemara can't believe it. Pinchas shalobert, son Chachamim, was Pinchas really acting against the will of the sages? Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron Kohen, could it be? And you know what the Gemara says? Yeah. In fact, he was. Amar Rav Yehuda bar Pazi, bikshu lina doto. They wanted to throw him into excommunication. They wanted to excommunicate Pinchas. Get him out of the Jewish people. Get rid of him. Had it not been for the divine spirit which overtook him and yelled out, that he will have for him and his children afterward a covenant of eternal priesthood. Meaning, says the Yerushalmi, what Pinchas did was not approved by the sages. They wanted to punish him for it. That's where God comes in and says, no, don't punish Pinchas. Instead, we're going to reward him. So we have this completely different perspective upon what happened here. That the Yerushalmi is telling us the sages do not approve of what Pinchas did. This is not something we encourage. And it makes you think for a second. Wait a second. Why do we allow this all together? Again, to clarify, what the Gemara says here, and in Sanhedrin as well, in the Babylonian Talmud, is the act that Pinchas did was not simply a story. It is the basis for a law. A law that generally allows for a degree of kana'ut, of zealotry. Meaning a law that allows people who are angry, who are jealous for God, who are disgusted by what's taking place, to take the law into their own hands and murder or kill people who are desecrating God's name in public. This is a general permission, a general dispensation for kana'ut. And the question is, if this is so discouraged, then why is it allowed altogether? And if you look at the Rambam, who codifies this halakha, who codifies this law, it's really not so simple. There are many limitations to it. Says the Rambam in source number 9, Ko haboel kutzit bein derech hatznut bein derech zenut im bala befarhesia v'hu sheyivol in asaram Yisrael yater im pogo bo kanoim v'argu hare ilu mishubachin uz reason. Anyone who has intercourse, cohabits with a non-Jew in public, in the eyes of 10 Jewish people or more, if zealots attack that person and kill them, they are praiseworthy. And he says, Davar ze halacha lemoshe misinai hu. This was a law of Moses from Sinai. Raya davar ze p'mesei Pinchas v'zimri. The raya to this is the story we just read about Pinchas. But pay attention to that for a second. The Rambam isn't saying there's a mitzvah to go about being a zealot if this happens. It doesn't sound like this is something that we generally encourage. What it sounds like is a reframing of a normally negative act in a positive light. Normally, doing something like this is horrible, but in a unique circumstances of Boel Kutit, in this unique circumstance of a desecration of God's name, then we allow the Kana'im, the zealots, to act, and then in that circumstance only, it's praiseworthy. But even within this circumstance, if you look at the Ravad, the Rav Avraham ben David, who was the Baal Plugta, the one who constantly argues with the Rambam, he takes issue with the Rambam statement here. He said, Katuva Ravid's Ravadzal, you know, even in this unique circumstance, we only say it's praiseworthy if you warn the person first. You have to say, stop! Don't do it! Stop! And then, if they then don't desist and continue in their act of desecration, then, and only then, are they praiseworthy. Otherwise, we don't say they're praiseworthy. So even within this unique circumstance, it's not so simple. You really have to be sure you have no other prerogative. And the Rambam continues the next part of the halacha, and he says, this is very limited. You got to do it at the time of the avera. It's got to be right then and there. Right? That it says in the pasuk, he speared them when they were in the act. If they stop in the middle, you can't kill them. And if you do, then you'll be killed. If the Kanai goes to Beit Din to ask for permission, we don't tell him to do it. Even if the act is still occurring. And as we've said, if this person who is committing this horrific act desists in the middle of his avera, of his sin, and defends himself, that's permitted. He will not get killed for it. So we have this very mixed impression of kana'ut. It seems like it's allowed, even praiseworthy, in certain circumstances, but it's very limited circumstances. We never encourage this act, and even when you're doing it, there's a very limited window for you to actually act on your zealotry. So the question is twofold. Why is this allowed generally? And when it is allowed, what should our perspective be on it? I'd like to think back to the psukim for a second that we started with. And I think we can understand that Pinchas is, and you can scroll up for a bit, Ezer, we can understand that Pinchas's act is in a very, very specific context. And as Rebbetzin Grisman mentioned a few times, when you think about kana'ut, what scares you about it? Well, number one, what scares you about it is this sort of haughtiness to say, I know what's right and you don't. It's also the violence involved. And I think another impression, and again, reflecting upon what we heard in the first year, it's potentially a disregard for the good of the people. A disregard for the good of the Jewish people. When we think about zealotry that happens nowadays, you could think of some of the things that happen in Israel with people throwing rocks at those who drive on Shabbat, shaming people who they think are not dressed modestly enough. These things continue to happen. And what really, I think, breaks the heart is that you think, look, what are you trying to do as a kana? You're a zealot. Are you really acting upon God's jealousy? And if so, do you really think that this is the way to do it? Do you think this is what is going to get people to love Torah and mitzvot? When you shame them and you ridicule them and you spit on them? One of my rabbis from Israel once said, you know what never happened? I never met anyone who was once driving on Shabbat. And all of a sudden, a window flew through their windshield and they said, you know what? Maybe I should keep Shabbat. Those people throwing rocks at me, they have a point. No one ever said that. That doesn't happen. But if you look in the context of Pinchas' act, think about what he did. What does Pinchas do? Again, Pasuk Yud Aleph. He shivach hamatim mi'abnei Yisrael. He stopped me from being angry at the Jewish people. The kanoa kinati betocham through his jealousy. The lo kiliti ibn Israel bakinati. What did Pinchas act for? Whom did he act for? Kanoot, I believe, has three very important criteria and requirements. Three prerequisites are, number one, it has to be completely l'shem shemayim. It has to be for the sake of heaven. It is so easy to mask an act of revenge or anger in the guise of religion. It is so easy. And as we'll see, this act has to be done completely because you are in touch with the name of God. You live and breathe Kavod Shemayim. You live and breathe the honor of heaven. And you're acting upon that. That's number one. Number two, you're doing it for the honor of God. I guess that's similar. But number three, you're doing it for the good of the Jewish people. This is done out of an act of love for the Jewish people. It has to be done that way. Yes, the love here is being expressed in a very drastic way. But Pinchas has to kill Zimri because he has to show the message to the Jewish people that this spiritual decay is not tolerable, and he has to save the Jewish people from being eradicated. There's a plague going on. What else should he do? He has to stop this. But it's not because I'm angry at the Jewish people. It's because I love the Jewish people, and this cannot continue. To think of it in a lahavdil, in a much more simple, tame context, a person is running a classroom, a teacher, and there's a student acting out. And it's gotten to the point where the class cannot continue with that student in the room. So you'll have to punish that student. You'll have to punish them, you'll kick them out, or you'll send them to the principal, or you'll do what you need to do. But it's not because you're angry at the student. It shouldn't be because you're angry at the student. It's because you care about the student and you care about the class. And in some circumstances, an extreme action needs to be taken for the good of the public. So that's kind of it, generally. You can scroll down now. And in this vein, we can see why there's this Shelo Ratzon Chachamim. If you could go back, Ezra, please, to the Torah Tamima. I believe it's source number 10. This is Rav Baruch Epstein, known as the Torah Tamima. And he says as follows, I'll just tell you outside. Why was it that the Chachamim, the sages, were against Pinchas? You know why? Because how did they know that he was really acting for the sake of heaven? There are so many ulterior motives that can be involved in an act of murder. And this has to be completely pure. How are we to know? How were they to know that this was really the right thing to do for Pinchas? Maybe he was angry. Maybe he was ashamed. Maybe they ridiculed him and he was responding to that. That's why they were against him until it became clear. No. The Ruach HaKodesh comes and says, no, Pinchas is doing this l'shem Shemayim. He's doing it for Bnei Yisrael and for Hashem. And for no other reason, that's why it's okay. You contrast this into source number 11 and 12. I won't go through the whole story again. But as we read, Eliyahu HaNavi, who is associated with Pinchas, also says, Kano kineti l'Hashem, I was jealous for God. And God goes in front of him. And he says, look, and there's an image of fire. There's an image, and then God says, I'm not in the fire. There's an image of a tempest, a storm, and God says, I'm not in the storm. And then there's an earthquake, and God says, I'm not in the earthquake. And finally, it ends with the kol demama daka, that silent, small voice. And again, Hashem asks Eliyahu, why have you ran away from the Jewish people? Why are you in the middle of nowhere? What are you doing here? And he says, I was jealous for God. And Eliyahu gets fired. Eliyahu loses his job. He's no longer the prophet. And the mob explains source number 12. You know why? And if you could just please scroll down, we'll end it in just the 2 minutes. The mob says as follows. You know what he did wrong? You know what Eliyahu did wrong? It's as follows. Ulan gafia nigla nira lo ki b'machane ro v'rash v'ish en Hashem bam. In the camp, in the encampment of fire and earthquakes, and God is not there. Rak b'kold mama. God is in that silent voice. Mimenu yilmadu suchav nivya ba yisar sar ba yashu rash v'vaya v'ir'ish. All God's messengers and prophets need to learn that they shouldn't get angry, cause earthquakes, yell, rioting. No, that's not the way to act. Kamosh as Eliyahu b'kinatol Hashem tzvakot. Like God, like Eliyahu did, that he stopped the rain. V'shachan aviyei Baal, and he killed the prophets of Baal. That's not how Hashem wants you to act. Ki Hashem yishlach neviyad shivo aliyem b'kol dmama. Hashem wants his messengers, his leaders, to go to the Jewish people with a soft, calm voice. To pull the people close with the chains of love and soft words. We influence people, not by yelling, not by screaming, not with kana'ut, but with love, with concern. Kana'ut itself has to be that way. And I'll just point out, it's just something fascinating, which for much more discussion, I heard this from Rabbi Chaim Angel. If you look at source number 13, we have the Sefer HaMakabim, the Book of the Maccabees, which discusses the story of Chashmonaim, the Maccabees from the Hanukkah story. And if you look in that story, the Maccabim, who are guerrilla fighters, who are fighting for the sake of God, often invoke Pinchas. In the source 13, Matisyo sees someone giving a carbon on the altar to Avodah Zarah, and he kills him. He says, I'm acting like Pinchas acted. But you know what's amazing? The book of the Maccabim isn't in Tanakh. The Sefer HaMaccabim doesn't become part of the biblical canon. And Rabbi Angel suggests, well, maybe the reason why is because we don't actually look on zealotry in such a positive light. We don't want to encourage behavior like that of the Maccabim generally. We don't want to encourage people to go out and take the law into their own hands and act on the religious zeal. So we see that Kana'ut is very challenging, it's complex. But I want to end with the following. What do we do about this nowadays? If you look in source number 14, Rashi defines Kana'ut in two different ways. Way number one, bin nikmoet nikmati. He took my vengeance, b'kitsoet ha-kesef shahayu li l'ksof. He felt the anger I should have felt. And there are two parts to Kana'ut. Part number one is the internal feeling. That feeling of how could this happen? How is this happening? How is God's name being desecrated? And then there's the expression of that act of anger. What I submit to you is that although we certainly should be trying to reach out to people with love and soft words, we don't want to interact with zealotry. But we should ask ourselves, how do we feel when we see people who are not upholding our tradition? How does it make us feel when God's name is being desecrated? What is the reason why we are not Kana'im? The reason should not be because, you know what? It doesn't bother us that much. It should bother us. We should feel it. And not in an angry way, in a sad way. Look how Hashem's people are not keeping Torah and mitzvot. That bothers me. It should bother us. We should feel that. We should be in touch with Hashem. It said, you know what it means to be Shomer Shabbat? We talk about keeping and guarding Shabbat. What does it mean to guard Shabbat? I heard this for Shlomo Katz. He said, you know what keeping Shabbat means? It means that you're not happy till everybody keeps Shabbat. It means guarding Shabbat means I think Shabbat is for everyone. I want to keep acting till it's so. And so to conclude, certainly Kana'ut is complicated. And we don't generally encourage people to committing violent acts in the name of religion unless only in very limited circumstances. But the feeling of Kana'ut, the fire of Pinchas and Eliyahu, this feeling of connection with God and wanting to do something about it, that is something I think that we can indeed think about. So thank you very much for listening, and thank you for joining us. Thank you again to the Salmons and to the and let this be Le'ilah Nishmat Bat Sheva Yeres, and everybody have a wonderful day.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Bergman. That covers most of what I was going to say. Thank you so much to both.